Welton Academy stands imposing against the autumn sky of 1959, its Gothic architecture embodying centuries of educational prestige. Inside the stone chapel, Headmaster Nolan leads a meticulously choreographed ceremony featuring ornate banners representing tradition, honor, discipline, and excellence. The ritualistic passing of candles symbolizes the light of knowledge being transferred to a new generation of promising young men. Nolan proudly announces the school's impressive 75% Ivy League acceptance rate, words hanging in the air as both promise and threat. Among the sea of pressed blazers sit our protagonists, Todd Anderson, awkwardly wearing his new uniform, perpetually living in his brilliant brother's shadow. Neil Perry, jacket gleaming with achievement pins, masking rebellion against his father's rigid expectations. Knox Overstreet, a romantic dreamer despite his privileged background. Charlie Dalton, whose rebellious spirit barely contains itself. And Richard Cameron, the embodiment of unquestioning conformity. The parting scene between parents and sons reveals the emotional dynamics these boys navigate. Todd stands isolated while his parents lavish attention on his absent brother's achievements. Neil's father methodically adjusts his son's achievement pins without warmth, treating him more like a project than a child. When John Keating is introduced as the new English teacher, his casual demeanor seems unremarkable, yet beneath his conventional appearance lies a force that will challenge everything this institution holds sacred. Life at Helton revolves around crushing expectations. Dean Nolan reminds Neil Perry that great things are expected of him, echoed by his father's assurance that he won't disappoint us. These aren't hopes, but demands, leaving no room for self-discovery. When Todd attempts to request rowing instead of soccer, he becomes paralyzed with anxiety, a sign of how the system has already silenced him. Todd has transferred to follow his successful brother's footsteps, burdened by an impossible standard. Mr. Perry's unexpected appearance reveals Neil's suffocating lack of agency. His father demands unquestioning obedience until medical school, with Neil's quick, "Yes, sir," speaking volumes about their relationship. The boys share frustration with their predetermined futures. Knox, destined for his father's law firm, Charlie for banking. Neil stabbing his achievement pin into his thumb until it bleeds symbolizes how these expectations wound them both, visibly and invisibly. The academic onslaught begins immediately, each class more demanding than the last. Chemistry overwhelms with a 500-page textbook. Latin promises immediate examinations, and trigonometry operates with military precision. Students focus merely on survival. Everything changes in English class. Mr. Keating's dramatic entrance, silently sitting before jumping onto his desk and announcing students may call him, "Oh, Captain, my Captain," signals this class will break conventions. His Walt Whitman reference demonstrates both literary knowledge and leadership reverence. In the honor room, lined with photographs dating back to 1859, Keating introduces Carpe Diem after Pitts reads Herrick's to the virgins to make much of time. Using the yellowing photographs as teaching tools, he challenges students to see beyond Welton's narrow definition of success, proving education can be both rigorous and inspiring. The boys are captivated when they discover Keating's past involvement with the Dead Poets Society, a secret group dedicated to sucking the marrow out of life, where poetry dripped from our tongues like honey. Women swooned, spirits soared, gods were created. This vision of passionate living electrifies them. Neil immediately proposes reviving the society, revealing his hunger for authentic experience. While some eagerly agree, Cameron worries about demerits and Pitts about grades, showing their conditioning toward external validation. Todd's reluctance to read aloud reveals his fear of self-expression. Their nighttime journey to the cave becomes a sacred ritual. The cave's primal atmosphere contrasts sharply with Welton's sterility. Neil solemnly reconvenes the society, establishing a new order based on shared passion rather than institutional hierarchy. The poetry readings transform the cave into a space of authentic expression, culminating in their reading of Congo, where Pitt's drumming unleashes something primal as they dance wildly through the forest. Keating's classroom becomes a laboratory for self-expression. He teaches that language wasn't invented merely to communicate, but to woo women, transforming words from academic tools into instruments of passion. Through Whitman, he encourages students to break free from conventions. His desk-standing exercise embodies his philosophy. I stand on my desk to remind myself that we must constantly look at things differently, a physical metaphor for their intellectual journey. The boys pursue individual passions. Pitts and Meeks build a radio. Knox pursues Chris, and Neil discovers acting. Todd's breakthrough comes through improvised poetry. When Keating pushes him to sound his barbaric yop, Todd creates a poem about a sweaty-toothed madman and truth being like a blanket that always leaves your feet cold. The class's applause validates his voice. Conflict emerges when Dean Nolan confronts Keating, insisting tradition and discipline are paramount, directly opposing Keating's belief in teaching students to think for themselves. Winter transforms Welton into a stark landscape mirroring the students' emotional struggles. Neil discovers his calling in theater, feeling completely alive as he perfects his Puck interpretation in A Midsummer Night's Dream. Neil's theatrical dream shatters when Mr. Perry discovers his deception. His father's explosive reaction, demanding immediate withdrawal despite Neil's leading role, reveals the gulf between them. Mr. Perry coldly reminds Neil of financial sacrifices, viewing his son as an investment rather than an individual. The Dead Poets Society extends their rebellion to daily life, eating with their left hands to reject right-handed conventions that perpetuate mechanical living. Knox's pursuit of Chris culminates in cycling to her school with flowers and a poem, interrupting her class with a heartfelt declaration that showcases his newfound courage. Neil's lie to Keating about his father's permission marks a crucial turning point, his averted gaze betraying both shame and determination. On performance night, Neil's transcendent performance earns a standing ovation, but his triumph collapses when he spots his father's stern figure, dreams colliding with prescribed reality. Mr. Perry delivers his harsh verdict. Neil must attend military school, Harvard, and medical school. Neil's plea that it's 10 more years, a lifetime, reveals how his father's unfulfilled dreams have become his burden. When the dead poets gather, Keating shares poetry from Thoreau and E.E. Cummings. Todd's transformation culminates as he leads a poem where everyone echoes, "And still we sleep," capturing the tragedy of unlived lives. The contrast between this communal moment and Neil alone in his darkened bedroom is stark. His suicide with his father's revolver while wearing his Puck crown symbolizes both rebellion and crushed dreams. The investigation seeks a scapegoat rather than examining the system. Cameron betrays the group, having thoroughly internalized Welton's values. When Keating returns during Nolan's class, Todd stands on his desk crying, "Oh, Captain, my Captain!" Others follow despite Nolan's fury. Keating's emotional thanks acknowledges that while he lost his position, he succeeded in awakening these young men to think independently. Their final stand honoring both their teacher and the courage to stand for one's beliefs.